Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, it's getting awful close now. Packers, Texans, Sunday noon kickoff at Lambeau Field as the Packers try to put together their first two-game winning streak since the early stages of 2016. I'll just ask you right off the bat, when we look at this matchup, what do you see as the biggest key to victory for Green Bay?
Well, I think it's going to be done in the trenches in this one. I think that that's where you're going to see the tone really get set. From Houston's perspective, Lamar Miller's turned out to be a great signing for them. What they're trying to do offensively, or what they've had to do offensively, he fits in really well. Fifth right now in the NFL in rushing yards, 881 yards. He's not a breakaway guy. It's not like he has like this 80-yard touchdown that's sort of like pushing his stats, but he's consistent, he moves the chains, and he seems to fit what they wanted to do there. From the Packers' perspective, they have to feel really good about the job they did against the Philadelphia running backs last week. You know, you look at it, Carson Wentz probably squeaked up for more rushing yards than they would have liked, but from the backfield perspective, 14 carries for 48 yards, nothing more than nine. I think that's where this is really going to come down to, is who wins in that facet of the game.
Yeah, for sure. Mike McCarthy was pretty convincing, certainly in his comments to the media on Thursday, that he believes Houston is coming into Lambeau Field to run the ball and run it some more, I think was his line, or something to that effect. And certainly when you look at Lamar Miller and what he's done, and the fact that you have a quarterback, they paid Brock Osweiler a lot of money, but he hasn't really delivered what they were hoping for, a quarterback who is tied for the league lead in interceptions with 13. You have to play to your strengths, and right now the strength for the Houston Texans is Lamar Miller in that running game. And you look at the Packers' run defense, overall, for the most part this season, I think it's been solid. The two big plays are the ones that really stick out, the long run by Murray in Tennessee and the long run by Kelly in Washington. Now, they all count. You know, you can't say, oh, you know, everything's been great except for two plays. Well, those two plays were big plays, and the Packers can't let those kind of things happen. But on balance, the Packers have done the job against the run this year, and this will be a big test for them.
It will, because if you look at Miller, in 8 of the 11 games that the Texans have played this year, he's had at least 20 touches. They get him the football one way or another. Most of it is through the backfield, but he'll catch a few passes as well. The Packers, as you said, statistically, when you're talking to the media, when you're talking outside of this group, you have to say, you can't get rid of those plays. The 75-yarder, the 80-yarder, or 66-yarder that they had in Washington.
Right.
Those plays are there to stay. But in your room, when the defensive line, when the linebackers are all getting together, you have to reemphasize that, look at all these plays that you did well. When you give up one big attempt like that, it ruins all of that.
Yeah.
It takes away all that effort. Think about the job they were doing on Rob Kelly in Washington. Even the game was somewhat at hand at that point, but giving up that 66-yarder completely flipped the page.
Yeah.
Somebody who was just paying attention to it for fantasy football purposes doesn't realize what the Packers had done against Kelly up until that point. But it was all for naught after that 66-yard carry. So that's going to be the message here. Don't let him break free. Make sure you stay on your assignments and your gaps. The Packers have done it really well this season. They got back to it in Philadelphia and need to keep it going now against Houston.
Yeah, I agree with you that the key really is the run defense. I would also say that if you can stop the run, which then puts the game in Osweiler's hands, I think the key for this Packers defense is to get multiple turnovers in this game. Osweiler has not done a great job protecting the ball, and I'm going to write about this on our website as well. Dom Capers has talked in the past so much about how turnovers can come in bunches. You know, Mike McCarthy's been harping for weeks on the Packers need to get the turnover differential turned around for this team, and it starts with taking the ball away on defense. Everything kind of points to, if the Packers are going to get a bunch of turnovers and start to turn around that negative turnover ratio on the season, everything points to it starting Sunday against this passing offense of Houston because of Osweiler's struggles.
Yeah, and that's the thing about Osweiler, too. You look at that, one of the things I was working on for our five key matchups this week. Right now on the season, Houston's 5-1 when Osweiler can get above 80 for a passer rating. There is a pretty wide margin of error there that they can sometimes live with. He hasn't had a game where he's been above 100 yet this season.
Yeah.
When he goes underneath 80, though, they're 1-4. So that really is a turning point for them. And the fact that he has a league-high 13 interceptions, as you would expect, his passer rating goes right along with that. 72.2 is the lowest among any quarterback with 400 attempts this season. The production hasn't been there for one reason or another. It just hasn't worked out to this point. The Packers need to make sure that you keep that trend going, that you make him pay for whatever opportunities that might be there for the defense. Being able to get that pressure is going to be key, but they've only given up 20 sacks on the season. It's not like he's been besieged by pressure. It's just that when there has been pressure, it tends to turn into a turnover.
Yeah, and the Packers pass rush, I think, has started to find itself a little bit. It started to come around a little bit against Washington, but wasn't quite good enough. And then against Philadelphia, we saw Dayton Jones actually, you know, leveled Carson Wentz with a big hit. The very next play was the overthrow to Zach Ertz that led to the interception. Those are the types of plays. That's what pass rush can do to help out the defense as a whole, and that's what the Packers need to continue to do now.
Sacks are great. You want to get as many of them as possible, but those negative yardage plays, and especially those quarterback hits, sometimes have a lot of hidden production in them, because it is, as you said, with the Dayton Jones play, sometimes what happens after that play when a quarterback starts thinking more, when they start to feel that pressure. How does the domino effect kind of change the landscape of a game? It happened against the Eagles, and I think that showed the Packers once again, even though they'd been a couple weeks where it was kind of lean on the pass rushing side, that potential is still right there.
Yeah, I agree. Well, we've got plenty more to break down on this Sunday afternoon matchup coming up. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. Wes, we've talked a lot about Houston's running game. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the Packers running game, because Mike McCarthy on Thursday spoke to the media about really wanting to get all of the running backs, more running backs involved in this rushing attack. The way things ended up breaking down in Philadelphia, James Starks had 17 carries. Ty Montgomery and Christian Michael just had one apiece. Now, the Packers had James Starks on the field a lot, you know, for the pass protection, the blitz pickup and whatnot. But as far as running the football, Mike McCarthy wants to, you know, maybe start to even those carries out a little bit. And we'll see maybe if he can accomplish that on Sunday.
The Packers are in an interesting spot because you do want to have James Starks on the field. He's your most experienced back. He's the guy that can most efficiently handle the three down opportunities. And when they go to that no huddle, there really isn't an opportunity to be switching these guys a lot. You need to have a guy in there that you're confident can pick up the blitz packages. I think that's something Starks has done well. I think Aaron Ripkowski's done it as well, pretty well as well.
For sure.
When you look at these last few weeks, probably the past month, with him getting some opportunities in those shotgun packages as well. What's interesting about Michael is that he's new to this offense, so can you really expect him to be a three-down back right away at the top of things? You're probably going to have some specialized packages, some series and some drives where you're going to be mixing and matching a little bit more so that he doesn't have to be there, you know, play after play after play and, you know, potentially be stressed in terms of his knowledge of the offense. Montgomery, I think McCarthy's right on point. The way he's been such a playmaker for them this season, you got to get the ball in his hands more.
Yep.
I'm not really concerned about whether or not that's as a carrier or as a pass catcher. He's just the type of guy that you want to get him the football, because as we saw a few weeks ago, exactly what he can bring to this offense when he does get the ball in the open field is extraordinary.
Yeah. We've heard a lot from Mike McCarthy this week, the phrase December football. We're heading into the final month here of the regular season. The Packers have five games, the fifth one being on January 1st here to finish up the regular season. Mike McCarthy really wants to get this run game going. As the weather turns cold, he wants to be able to count on a running game when he needs it. That being said, with the situation the Packers are in at 5-6, this is, you know, as much a must-win game on Sunday afternoon as any. I don't see him necessarily being stubborn and trying to really force the run if it's not working, because with the way Aaron Rodgers has been throwing the football and the way the passing offense has been in rhythm, if you're not dealing with major weather issues at this point, you know, you can't. I know he wants to run the football, but you can't be too stubborn about it, because these guys need to win this game.
Yeah, you want to put it on film. You want teams to have to respect it and make sure that they're aware of it. But I don't know if I necessarily had a total huge problem with their breakdown of run-pass against Philadelphia. I think it was, 45 dropbacks to 24 attempts, something like that.
Yeah.
That's not the worst ratio. I mean, it's somewhat lopsided, but I think you're playing to your strengths. Now, the thing is, though, as you get, as you mentioned, as you get into these games, you have three at home now. You're going to be playing in Chicago in a couple weeks. That's cold weather football. You need to be able to show teams that you can run it when you need to. But at the same time, never losing sight of the fact that the Packers need to get some wins here. In what they did last week, they shouldn't have any qualms about that. They shouldn't have any disappointment in how they played. That's exactly the way they need to execute that offense. If it you can establish the run, that's positive. That's something you need to do. But at the same time, the check down routes, the short passes, all those things can have a very similar effect. And they just need to make sure that they stay consistent in that, be productive in it, and make teams be accountable for it. Houston's an interesting defense. They really are. They aren't really getting as much pass pressure as they have with J.J. Watt in the past.
Sure.
26 right now in sacks. They're doing a really good job still with their pass defense. Their run defense is middle of the pack. So there's going to be opportunities there, and I think that's when they do get those chances, whether it is making the right cut or finding the right hole. This is going to be a big game for the Packers to make sure they execute on those chances.
Yeah, for sure. When you look at Houston's defense, the pass defense in particular, Jonathan Joseph, maybe the top cornerback that they've
Jackson.
Got.
And, yeah, you have Kareem Jackson. He'll go over into the slot. They run a lot of sub, much like Dom Capers in their defense. You know, they'll mix and match. There isn't a standout. You know, Joseph's 32 years old right now. It's a little bit different ball game for him at this point. But much like Tremont Williams for a number of years with the Packers and Charles Woodson, a very savvy player. But, yeah, there probably isn't that, you know, the type of guys that they've seen recently, the Patrick Petersons of the world, that they're going to have to contend with in this game.
Yeah, and that pass rush minus J.J. Watt, it sounds like Whitney Mercilus and Jadeveon Clowney, the former number one overall pick, are the guys that that the Texans really rely on. Not a bunch of sack numbers that jump off the page, but Romeo Crennel, we mentioned this briefly earlier this week on the show. Romeo Crennel is a defensive coordinator that Mike McCarthy, you know, in various places over the years, over the decades, whatever you want to say, has gone head to head with, and this is a really creative, savvy defensive mind who Crennel can bring any kind of package into any kind of game, and Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers really have to be ready for anything here.
Yeah, absolutely, and as we talked about earlier this week, I mean the packages that they come up with, a lot of this isn't, you know, just specific. It's just as in general. It's kind of tailor-made to who the opponent is. Clowney sort of fits into that. They kind of use him, I would say, sort of like how Julius Peppers has kind of fit into Green Bay, although they're completely different players.
Right.
In terms of he'll put his hand down, he'll play a defensive end. He obviously can stand up. That's a big part of their offense, their defense as well. What's impressed me the most about Crennel coming in there, though, they had a really good foundation with Wade Phillips and Gary Kubiak in what they had built. Even during the lean times when things got rough offensively, they still were playing really solid defense, I thought, for the most part. Crennel has come in, taken a lot of that talent, fit it to his version of the 3-4 and the base mentality philosophy, and they've had success with it. As I said before, though, it's interesting in that it's not the traditional, okay, they're getting a lot of pressure, so that's setting up their pass defense. They've just been really efficient in ways,
yeah.
And they've found ways to have everybody pick up the slack when you don't have J.J. Watt on the field, which also is an incredible challenge.
Yeah, for sure. A lot of people didn't think Houston's defense would stay at the level, league-wide, as far as the league rankings that it is without J.J. Watt, but they have done that. So, but with that, we'll throw it to a break, and we'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkiewicz there. And Wes, I wanted to talk a little bit about a story that's on our website, packers.com. You've been working on a piece on veteran right tackle Brian Bulaga. Arrived in Green Bay in 2010, was a rookie starting in Super Bowl 45. Been around, aside from TJ Lang, the elder statesman at this point, on the offensive line. And take nothing away from David Bakhtiari at left tackle, who got the new contract and is having a standout season of his own. But we've heard multiple times from Mike McCarthy this season that Brian Bulaga is really having the best season of his career, and it's hard to argue with that.
It's very hard to argue with it, because you look at the situation that he's been put in this season. The thing is for so many years it's been him and TJ Lang. I mean, Lang up until this foot injury had missed, I think, what did we talk about, 2 games?
Yeah.
I think in his time with the Packers since becoming a full-fledged starter in 2011, they've had so many reps together. I mean, we're talking hundreds of, you know, thousands of reps that they've worked next to each other. Well, then suddenly it's Don Barclay for a game. Then suddenly it's Jason Spriggs, a left tackle in college that really had never played guard. Only here and there had even repped the position during the regular season. Well, now suddenly he's the guy that Bulaga is working next to. I remember talking to Spriggs recently, talking about how valuable that's been, not only just from the perspective of getting into a game and getting acclimated, but just knowing the overall game plan and just how really resourceful Bulaga is. And on top of that, he's playing probably the best football that he's played in his time in Green Bay. 2014 was a really impressive season for him.
Yeah.
But I think looking at this year with how he's, you know, as Mike McCarthy knocked on wood, been able to avoid injuries, a little bit lighter this season, there's a lot to like about Brian Bulaga's game.
Yeah, for sure. And overall with the Packers' offensive line, we've seen injuries hit in a lot of different places and a lot of different times. The unit seems to have rolled with the punches, you might say, a little bit better. Not quite as many noticeable hiccups in terms of guys, you know, subbing in, you know, in and out as we saw last year in 2015. The depth of this unit, as well as the overall level of play, but the depth of this unit, that offensive line has really been a key to this season.
This has been a challenge for them. They've really been challenged in 2016. No more are we talking about, you know, 4 or 3 consecutive seasons of having the same 5 starters. You have Lane Taylor move in as their starting left guard now. You start the first half of the season with J.C. Treader at center. Now it's Corey Linsley. We already talked about what's been going on at right guard. They've had two staples at the tackle position in David Bakhtiari and Brian Bulaga, who are both playing at a high level. But there's been a lot of mixing and matching this season since the regular season started. So for the Packers to be able, as you said, roll with the punches, be able to adapt, adjust. Aaron Rodgers had gone out of his way, I think, twice this past week without being directly asked about the offensive line to really praise those guys for what they've been able to do offensively, being able to keep that pressure off, not letting a guy get free and getting a clear shot at the quarterback. That's all been really critical to what they've done. And I think sometimes, you know, the offensive line, they don't get the credit they deserve. Sometimes they get too much blame for certain things. But it's provided Rodgers with a manageable pocket, a movable pocket, and all 5 of those guys, regardless of who it's been, have really stepped up.
Yeah, for sure, and maybe tested even more this week, depending on how mobile Rodgers is with the hamstring and whatnot. So we'll have to see how that plays out Sunday afternoon. But for now, let's take care of some sponsor business, Wes. Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Subs' Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. 2 pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 12 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/best seats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford, Wes Hodkowitz, and Wes, as we always do, our final segment of the week, take a look at what's going on elsewhere in the NFC. Thursday Night Football, Dallas Cowboys pull out a 2-point victory in Minneapolis, 17-15 over the Vikings. The Vikings now 6-6, so the Packers can actually tie them for second place in the NFC with a win on Sunday. Game comes down to a 2-point conversion. Minnesota needs the 2-point try with less than 30 seconds to go to tie it up. They don't get it. A little controversy, though, with the hit to Sam Bradford's head that the referee was not in the right position to be able to see, so he didn't throw the flag. I guess the question needs to be asked, is a play like this going to maybe even lead to more discussion in the offseason about penalties becoming subject to replay review?
Yeah, this is the difficult question right now for the NFL to answer, because the narrative this year has been, how can we speed up the game? How can we make things go faster?
Right.
If you take that out of their hands and make that reviewable as well, well, then suddenly, you know, you're risking potentially slowing down the game even more. There's a lot of people out there who are a lot smarter than me that make a lot more money than me that will make that decision ultimately. But I know reading the stories out of Minnesota today, the Vikings locker room was not happy about this.
Yep.
A lot of guys who typically are pretty reserved, it sounded like, had some pretty strong reactions to it. And it is tough. I mean, because those are the type of plays that it just really comes down to a human being able to witness that with athletes at the highest level performing at the highest speed in the blink of an eye. And they missed it. So
yep.
Where does that all factor out? I don't know. But at the same time, I will say this. Talk about putting yourself in a position to win a football game, not letting the refs decide it. The Vikings made too many errors throughout the course of that game really be able to control their own destiny. Not saying it was the right call, but the Vikings were in that position to begin with for a reason.
Yeah, for sure. Dallas Cowboys win their 11th straight. They're now 11-1 and continuing their charge for what appears to be the number one overall seed in the NFC, though they'll be facing, I believe, the New York Giants next week, which is a big matchup in the NFC East that could change some things. But as far as the Packers are concerned, on Sunday, Detroit at New Orleans, a game a lot of Packers fans will have their eye on. The best-case scenario for Green Bay is the Packers get a win, get to 6-6. If the Saints can knock off the Lions, then the Packers head into the final four games of the season, only one game back in the NFC North. That's what Green Bay's hoping for.
Absolutely. The first three things worked out perfectly for them. Thanksgiving, the loss for the Vikings losing to Dallas, and then the Packers winning in Philadelphia. Two more different dominoes could fall their direction this week. We'll see if Joe Lombardi, you know, in that offense that the Saints have, number one ranked right now in the NFL, if they can take on Detroit and be able to get that vote in there, that'd be huge for them and also set the Packers up pretty well.
Yeah, that's an explosive group, especially when they play at home in the Superdome. But with that, we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com, at Wes Hodd on Twitter. I'm at Mike Spofford. For the team account, at Packers, thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.